You can't keep a good man down, goes the saying, and whether that applies to the exhumation of Alan Partridge will be for the audience to decide when Steve Coogan's most famous character returns to BBC One this Friday night. Older, but perhaps no wiser. That's Alan, not Steve, I think. The hapless Norfolk broadcaster has returned from a year-long stint working in Saudi Arabia and, over six episodes, explores what he sees as a ridiculous explosion in mental health issues and the resultant wellness industry. Earlier, Steve Coogan told me where his alter ego is at as this series called How Are You? It's Alan Partridge begins.
In Britain's first ever documentary about mental health.
You're panicking, Lynn. Breathe.
I'm stopping, crouching down and asking.
How are you?
It's Alan Partridge.
He's been ousted once again by the BBC for upsetting them, upsetting senior management, which happens from time to time, as we know. and of course, he went off to Saudi Arabia because... you know, there's a sort of expat thing. He felt like he can thrive. Sometimes when you're a stalwart at the BBC, you can go and find other pastures to graze. But I think he's anxious because of new protocols, diversity, inclusivity, all that stuff. I think he's grappling with how to somehow join the gang, as it were, with all that. So he has anxiety about that, I think, which is why. You know, he's trying to do a series on mental health because all the moves he makes are sort of fairly cynical career moves, and I think he feels like if he says he has some sort of neurological condition, it will make people like him, and also he can talk about this and if you like grasp the nettle of mental health and make it his own.
Well, he grasps the nettle in a little tip at the top because he essentially doesn't really understand the whole mental health issue and what it is and if it actually even exists.
The thing is, doing a series on mental health, we like the idea of that because when you tell people, they automatically get a bit anxious, which we don't see as a bad thing. We think that's a good thing because to do sort of comedy that has real bite and when you get the laugh, it's a big laugh, you have to sort of play with fire. And we thought, well, let's talk about mental health. You have to risk offending people for the wrong reasons, but if you do things with your heart in the right place, you can have your cake and eat it. I know that's a load of mixed metaphors and everything, but anyway, the series actually that is on mental health, Alan is of course trying to grapple with it and does it in a ham-fisted way and doesn't do it particularly effectively, but he does I think the whole series does shed some light on what it is, how we deal with mental health issues. So he accidentally illuminates the topic, if you like.
For many of us, mental health is as far down the agenda as the whole sex change debate. But Britain is in crisis. Without swift action, our minds will... egg. Implode. And yet no one has done anything about it. Until now. Which is why, in Britain's first ever documentary about mental health, I'm stopping,
go,
crouching down and asking, how are you? It's Alan Partridge.
He accidentally illuminates the topic by almost like dismissing it. And I think that's really interesting because it is quite a high, as you say, it's a high wire act.
Yeah, that's always a sort of the bread and butter of, when, especially with a character like Alan Partridge. What we don't want to do is, we'd rather sort of, I mean the Royal We, me and Rob and Neil Gibbons, who are the other writers on it, we'd rather risk sort of going down in flames than sort of fade away, rage against the dying of the lights with Alan Partridge. So we always have to do something which has, which is troubling, because then you have to navigate. It's more interesting trying to navigate difficult subject matter than it is to do something which is just a home run.
But what is the target actually in this? Is the target the failure of people like Alan Partridge to actually grasp the nettle properly of mental health? Is it about how you see certain presenters perhaps on sofas being vacuous about it?
All of those things. I mean, we don't say, oh, this is our target. We say, and also, our ire isn't reserved for, the Daily Mail and their sort of, Little Englander mentality. We also lob a few grenades at the Guardian and the sort of so-called enlightened thinking. You know, we're pretty broad with who we target, and it's a moving target, really. Sometimes, yeah, we sort of let's have a joke about this. Alan Partridge is a sort of Trojan horse that you can talk about certain subject matter that would ordinarily land you in hot water, and that's sort of the enjoyment of it, is that you can sort of you can talk about things that are normally off limits in a way which, well, if you make people laugh, you take the curse off it, and they feel less anxious about it. And I think that's a good thing generally. You know, you can have a, sometimes ironic to have a more honest conversation by having it through a comedy character.
The thing is, the honest conversation obviously takes place somewhere else, and you're making assumptions that will take place somewhere else. I suppose is what I think. I mean, I wonder if, in a way, your own mental health issues have given you kind of license to do this in a way.
Yeah, when I with the Gibbons write stuff about Partridge, we tap into our own failings. It's not, generally speaking, people don't want to show weakness, don't want to show that they are flawed or have vulnerabilities. But that's the stuff of comedy. So once you sort of get past that, it becomes quite liberating. You basically sort of weaponize all your weaknesses. All human beings are imperfect. And so it's just a very fruitful, a fruitful seam to mine. That's a good mixed metaphor for you.
But do you accept that the mockumentary, as you say, could be triggering for some people who are struggling watching it?
I think that that's a very valid question. And I think that even though we're writing comedy, there's an inference that if you're writing comedy, you're somehow unethical. And that's not the case. We're quite cognizant about who we direct our ire at. As a general rule, we punch up and we don't punch down.
Could you see a scenario? I mean, as you say, you know, the BBC can come down in like a ton of bricks. Could you see a scenario after the series airs where Alan Partridge is cancelled?
It's a very interesting question. Well, we have cancelled him in the fiction, but I mean, could he be cancelled in reality? yeah, that's a very interesting question. Some comics have received a lot of criticism for the way they approach certain topics, unfairly, I think, in my opinion. But with Alan, there's sort of one step removed, and you know, there are inverted commas around everything I do as Alan, which intelligent audiences understand and can put in the contextualize correctly. Sometimes, of course, you do. Alan Partridge says things which are ill-informed, ignorant, small-minded. But on other occasions, he may accidentally say something which most people secretly believe to be true but would be too afraid to say. So he can say the Emperor's not wearing any clothes and get away with it.
So Alan Partridge really has stuck to you like glue. But what is the pitch to Gen Z? I mean, won't they just look at Alan Partridge and think, there is my granddad?
Well, I was hoping they said, there is my dad. But that won't be long before they say that. I think there is a sort of generational thing now, which is that I've had quite a lot of parents and, if you like, grown-up children who both find it really funny. And it's one of the few things that where the Venn diagram allows them both to laugh together. So I think with the older generation, I think they used to think, oh, there, but for the grace of God, go I. And the younger generation go, that's my dad, that's my uncle, that's my teacher, whatever. So there's definitely it appeals now, actually, strangely, there's sort of a dip in its appeal. And now there's sort of new appeal to sort of younger audiences who find it hilarious because it reminds them of people they know.
Well, a broader question on that whole question of balancing humour with sensitivities. I mean, we know Alan Partridge thrives in awkwardness and discomfort. Mm. But how do you balance that humour with different sensibilities than perhaps were around in the 90s?
Well, the thing about the character is you can sort of you can apply him to whatever is the current thinking, as it were, and use him as a filter for whatever the discussion is at any given time. And in the 90s, he was probably more of an unreconstructed right of centre Little Englander. And probably quite xenophobic and all the rest of it, and maybe quietly racist with a small R. But as times have moved on, I think he's mercurial enough and pragmatic enough to know that you have to survive. So I think I would say he was economically conservative, but socially liberal, because he saw David Cameron pull that off with a degree of success. So I think that's where he is at the moment. But he's definitely, the character's evolved as, you know, as lots of people do.
Well, I mean, it all gets a bit meta. Alan Partridge gets stopped as a Norfolk former superstar for selfies. You still get stopped in real life as Steve Coogan, if that indeed is your real life, asked to do Alan Partridge. And many actors talk about the danger of a character taking over. I mean, is there a real danger that the Alan Partridge cage is just going to get smaller and smaller and you're going to be inside it?
Yeah, that's always a possibility. I mean, I'm very comfortable with the fact that I do, you know, I do other things. If it was literally the only thing I did, I think I would probably have some, you know, that would, I'd probably be in deep psychosis by now. But, you know, I'm able to do other things. I'm doing another series of The Trip with Rob Brydon. You know, I did a drama for Netflix. I just did a drama about Mick McCarthy and Roy Keane, a movie that's out later this year. So I do enough other stuff. And then I produce stuff, you know, with other people in, and I write screenplays with Jeff Pope, and so as long as I can do all that stuff, I don't. Then coming back to Alan is like just having a warm bath. It's like putting an old jacket on. So, and I know him so well now that it's sort of quite pleasurable. And I wouldn't, and I sort of wouldn't like to say goodbye even if I could.
So wait a minute, is there more fuel in Alan Partridge's tank?
Yes, definitely, because the world will change. The world will evolve. The world will change. Things will happen, and people will want to talk about that in a way that is risk-free. And if you do it with Alan Partridge, then you take the curse off subjects and people can talk about it without... And if you're laughing, people are less fearful.
As you say, there's another version of yourself back on our screens because you and Rob Brydon and The Trip, who you play versions of yourselves. This must be really difficult, playing so many versions of yourself. But you're off to Scandinavia, more than 5 years since you made The Trip. I'd just like to say, there's quite a lot of middle-aged white duos going around the world on various different screens now.
You're absolutely right, but we started it.
Alan Partridge. I mean, Steve Coogan, thank you very much.